This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is hour number two. We've got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. We are also, later on in this show, we're going to talk SEC football. Because the SEC, you know, again, everybody, you know, either loves it or hates it or whatnot, but it's such a presence in college football right now. John Clay is going to join us in hour three. We're going to talk about Kentucky and the conference in general, because they've got a number of teams ranked in the top 25. How good is the middle part of the conference? We always talk about, hey, we get Alabama, we get Georgia, but really, how good is Kentucky? How good is Tennessee? How good is Arkansas and Ole Miss and whatnot? So we'll talk to them coming up in hour number three. But college football has been fun this year. I know that it's been difficult to sort of follow player movement. That's kind of part of the deal with the transfer portal. Players that you remember in one spot are now in another spot. But when I was talking earlier about Kansas, for example, and Kansas not getting in the top 25, and people were saying, this is a travesty. This is absolutely... And I agree. I don't think it's a travesty. I don't think it's a crime. It's just that they're not a traditional program that has been in our presence for a long time, but that doesn't mean you can't be in the top 25. It has not hurt some teams that have gone 4-0 out of the Sun Belt and some other conferences that we've seen over the years that play really well in the first four games and sort of catch our eye and go, oh, okay, here we go. Kansas was one of those teams that has been such a doormat for so long that losing to them could cost you your job. That if you lost to Kansas, it was almost so unacceptable that you were immediately on the hot seat and you better get your act together. But Kansas now is off to a 4-0 start, and they've got some exciting young players on the offensive side of the ball. Now, defensively, they give up too much yards, and they do give up some points, and that's not something that is going to be, you know, those who are really following it are going to put them on the outside of the top 25. But when you talk about how irrelevant these things are, right? Like, oh, who cares if the top 25 in the AP? Who cares about the coaches poll? What matters is the committee. You know who cares? The schools. The schools really do care. There is something about that number, whether it's 25 or 1 or 15. There is something about that number that matters. It shows respect. It shows everybody that you are building something that's respectable. You know, those others that are outside, no matter how many votes you get, if you're not in the top 25, no matter how irrelevant it is, it does matter. People in Kansas were not happy about it.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it is the good, the bad, and the dumb, and the Wednesday edition. Again, doesn't matter what edition. It's always good, the bad, and the dumb. What's the good of the day?
Good of the day is movie marketing.
Movie marketing, okay.
Movie marketing. I don't know much about this movie. I know it's a horror film called Smile.
Yes.
And part of their movie marketing, funding or thing that they're doing? I don't know. I can't think of the word I was looking for. Is having actors sit inside baseball stadiums or just stadiums around the country, just smiling.
Just doing that creepy smile.
Just doing
that
creepy smile, yeah.
So these actors from the movie, are they just actors that they're hiring?
I think they're just actors they're hiring. Yeah. I don't think it's actors from the movie, but
we've
seen them a lot, like at Yankee games. And
so that's the marketing campaign
for that's the word I was looking for, campaign. Thank you.
Yeah.
I kind of like that idea.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, I mean, what's a way to, instead of like, you know, showing one preview after another, after another, after another, or spending, you know, millions of dollars in this area, that area, just, you know, it's like, hey, I'm going to put you in a stadium. I just want you to, you know, every once in a while, just stand up and do that creepy smile.
Yeah.
And get noticed on camera.
That's been pretty good. It does look like I saw the trailer. It does look really, really creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want,
I mean, I have no idea what it's about.
Do you remember the movie years ago? It starred Richard Gere called The Mothman Prophecies.
I've heard of it. I don't remember it though.
Yeah. It was years and years ago. I might even say it was late 90s, I think. But anyway, it was a Mothman prophecy. And if you're from West Virginia, Point Pleasant, West Virginia, it was sort of based on a legend of the Mothman. But part of that legend is there was a couple of people in that area that saw what they called the Smiling Man. His name was Ingrid Cole. They said he just had this really big smile on his face. And when I saw that trailer, I immediately thought of sort of the legend of the Mothman, because that really creeps me out. That smiling thing is creepy. It's like Joker smile, yeah, where it's not friendly. And I was like kind of excited that somebody put that concept into a movie finally. Cause just like these creepy smiles. I don't know if it's a good movie. I don't want to say it looks good. It just looks like it's got an interesting premise.
I've never really been a horror movie fan.
I don't see horror movies. I don't run to see them. I think I saw the first Halloween and that's it. I've seen a couple of Friday the 13th. I saw a couple of Nightmare on Elm Street, but I'm not a horror guy.
Yeah.
That's not my thing.
I saw a bunch of the Scream movies.
I saw that too.
Because there was always those I liked it because there was twist at the end.
To me,
I'm really into just the blood and guts. And
the horror films I kind of like are the ones that are psychologically terrifying, not the murder, slash and gore type of things. But if there's something, you know, one movie I really liked that I thought was creepy. Do you remember the one with Denzel Washington where there was like a spirit that kind of bounced around people?
No.
I wish I could remember these movies, but it was like a spirit that bounced around and was kind of chasing him. So it would go from person to person to person to person. And that was kind of
ooh, that
terrifying.
Was weird. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good movie. It was a pretty good movie, but yeah, good for us. Smile. That's kind of cool.
I like the campaign.
Yeah, I do too.
I mean, it's unique. It's different. It makes you, it's making us talk about it.
Yeah.
So it's working.
You know what the coolest campaign I saw when I was in Vegas? Remember the was one of the asteroid movies? I think it was Armageddon. But my wife and I were living in Vegas at the time, and you know the Luxor Hotel, the pyramid? They put a big sticker on the side of the Luxor that showed an asteroid had gone through it. So it was like an asteroid, like a burn hole.
That's awesome.
with a sky, like a blue sky in the middle, so it looked like an asteroid had gone through it. And it was awesome. It was amazing. It was a great, great marketing campaign. It was really brilliant. It looked real. I mean, it looked crazy real. But it was of course without all the death screaming and fire. It was just this one clear asteroid shot through the Luxor. But it was really well done. All right, what's the bad of the day?
Bad of the day has to. This was a no brainer for me. It happened almost immediately because I actually watched the game yesterday.
Yes.
The bat of the day goes to the U.S. men's national team.
What's going on?
So I will let you know because I don't know if you were following along. They had two World Cup tune-up matches. And these matches, you know, they're kind of like when a college football team, an Alabama team, plays a cupcake, right?
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, it's... They're working on a few things, but they should perform well, especially if you're considered to be one of the top teams in the world. But with these tune-up matches, you want to face competition that's similar to who you're going to be playing against. So they played Japan on, I believe it was Friday, and then they played Saudi Arabia yesterday.
So are both of these teams not good at soccer?
No, Japan is.
Okay, Alabama playing a cupcake. No, playing like Missouri.
But exactly.
Like they're in the SEC, but they're not.
You're
one of the
scheduling teams that you should be able to beat to kind of give you that confidence. But you're also scheduling teams that will challenge you a little bit.
Okay.
Japan is, you know, they're a good foe. They're a good team. We're probably equal to them. I mean, that's more like Alabama, Auburn, or Alabama, Georgia type of thing where, you know, they're equals to a certain point.
All right.
But if you watch these games, you would not have ever thought that they were equals.
Because the U.S. hasn't scored, right?
No, it's not even that. I mean, don't worry about scoring. USA has put up two shots in two games. Two shots.
Okay, so
on goal.
Okay, so let's go back to because I hate to say this.
It's almost I'm going to change the narrative now because what I'm going to say is it was almost as if these teams scheduled the U.S. as the cupcake game.
Okay, all right. But
that's why I was bringing up that analogy.
Okay, because I'm confused. So they were playing. Let's get rid of the cupcake thing for a second, okay. Because you said that these teams are on par with the U.S.
Well, Japan.
Not Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia shouldn't be. No, we should have gone in there and handled business, maybe won 1-0, 2-0 easily. Okay. Not sweated as much as there's 0-0 draw.
If you're playing these games and you're working things out, who cares what the score is as long as you go, hey, it didn't matter what the score is. We figured out some lineups that we want to use. We found out some things that we want to do. It's fine. Is that the thing that they're saying afterwards, or is this a real concern now?
I think it's a real concern.
Okay.
I mean, we're a little over a month away, a month and a half away from the our first game against Wales on November 21st. Okay,
but let me point this out. If you have a baseball team and they bring up a minor league pitcher, they don't really care what the score is, right? They might have a talented guy that's like, hey, we're going to give him a major league shot here. And if he gets shelled, he gets shelled, but we need to know what we have. In this regard, how concerning is it that we might have worked on some stuff, but two shots is pretty awful.
And that's what's concerning. We have not been an attacking force to these guys. I mean, I will say this. I mean, we allowed 2 goals against Japan, nothing against Saudi Arabia. So I guess our defense is holding strong, but not really. It's just there's something lacking. There's like this, you know, the drive to wanting to win is lacking. I mean, I watched that Saudi Arabia game and there was no assertiveness. There was no sense of urgency with this team to try to perform something. It was, so let's just sit back and just pass it around and let's try to feed the ball through. But when we feed the ball through, we're doing terrible at it and not giving ourselves real chances.
Here's another question. Is it more like an NFL preseason game where in the end, just get through this because why put out an effort?
Maybe, but
it doesn't.
But
like Tom Brady is not going to go out in the third quarter of a preseason game and go, screw it. I'm now coming in. We're down 15 to nothing. Like I'm done. I'm now playing. Like he goes, whatever. Like this is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. The real game starts on the 9th. Of September or whatever it is, and that's all I care about. I don't care what happens here. Is there were the players like, look, why am I running around in these games that don't matter? Get me to the World Cup. Just get me to the World Cup. I don't care.
I would say
like,
that,
I'm not
but...
going to lose sleep with this game, with what happens in Saudi Arabia. Nobody cares.
I would say
underestimate us because of this game, the better.
I would say maybe, but the fact is that you're rolling out there with your presumably starting team.
Okay.
And you're wanting them to create, you're wanting to try to create chemistry. And the best way to create chemistry is to, you know, for these guys to be playing with each other. And they just don't look like they know each other at all.
Okay.
And I think that's a real concern starting at the head coach and what they've been doing in the camp leading up to the World Cup.
I'm going to say this about the United States soccer team. You need a better PR team. You need a better media relations team. Because the way you're presenting this as a guy that follows this sport, you're basically saying the United States is way better than this. And I think the average American has zero idea how good the United States team should be.
Well, they're top. I can tell you this. That they're
Nope.
What are you wanting to know?
What I'm saying is if the United – they have not sold the American people that they are really good or should be better or should be good. I think a majority of casual wake-me-up-when-it's-the-World-Cup fans still think the United States are underdogs to most of the world.
I would say yes to that.
I'm not talking about you.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not talking about you. And I'm not even saying it's based on reality. What I'm saying is, and this happens all the time. I just brought up Kansas as a perfect example, right? Kansas is a good football team. They've got some really good players, right? When they play well, people go, what the hell? Kansas, they suck. Why? Why do they stink? Well, they've always stunk. Well, wait a minute. What if I told you they had a running back that is one of the more dynamic players in the Big 12? But they still stink. No, hold on. They've got a quarterback and they got a new coach and they... Doesn't matter. The perception is that team can't possibly be very good. I think most casual, again, wake me up when it's a World Cup. I'm not following friendlies. I don't even know what Confica is. I don't even know what half of these tournaments are. But when the U.S. is in the World Cup, wake me up. I still don't think that person is convinced that the U.S. should be a lot better than it really is.
So they're probably going in thinking we're going to have three games and we're out.
Maybe, or maybe win a game or two, but that's about it.
No, but I'm saying we're going to play three games and then that's it because we're not making the knockout stage.
Right, whatever. Yeah, because that might be it. And I think that the team is good, and it should be one of the things that penetrates the sports culture so that when we get to the World Cup, you're like, no, this team should, this is their expectations. They should be really good. They should be good. They should be decent. These results that you brought up are bad. They're really bad. They're not, whatever, same old U.S., whatever. No, it's, hey, this is concerning because this is a really good team. They're really well put together.
No, they are. And I mean, or at least we think they are.
Yeah, I hope so.
Because they're not showing it now.
Because I think the World Cup is fantastic.
And maybe they are treating it like an NFL preseason game, saying, hey, I'm not going to ball out 100%. I want to make sure to, you know, just work on getting to know my guy who's in front of me, my guy to the right of me a little bit better. And then when we get to the World Cup, we're going to show up and shock the world.
Yeah, I mean, was the goal to get through these things healthy and just be like, you know, nobody tripped on a piece of course,
but,
and,
you know, you want to show something a little bit more than two shots in two games. I mean, that's, right. I mean, you, the bare minimum should have at least four or five shots on goal in one game.
Sure. Sure. All right. What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is Fox Sports putting out this list that appeared on Twitter. It's the top. They claim these to be the top five unbreakable records. And they're all baseball. The top five unbreakable records of baseball, right?
Right.
And only one of them, maybe two, I can agree with. The first one they had the top five unbreakable record. That number one was Barry Bonds career home runs.
Right.
I think that is breakable.
That is breakable.
Yeah. Eventually, someone will get to that point.
Mm, okay.
I mean, it's tough, but I don't think it's unbreakable.
All right, go ahead.
I can kind of get behind Shohei Ohtani's 10 wins plus 30 and 30 home runs. I don't think we're going to see something like that.
I don't think so.
Joe DiMaggio's 56 game hitting streak.
Seen it close, but no one's even come close to 50 except Pete Rose.
You know, but I mean, it's the fact of where the ranking is too, because that number five is Cy Young, 750 complete games.
Yeah,
that should be number one.
That should be number one. That's never going to happen.
It's never
going to
happen
ever again.
That
mentality is gone. That idea of what a pitcher does is now out of the. I write these little scripts for baseball. I don't know how many times I've written tossed seven scoreless innings, tossed six scoreless innings, tossed six and a third scoreless innings.
And pulled.
All the time. I write it all the time. Nobody does complete games.
I mean,
anymore.
What? We have three or four. A pitcher may have three or four a year, maybe.
And you know why there's no reason to? Because when you pay a guy out of the bullpen, you use him.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. When you pay mid relievers over $1 million a year, you use them. That's the mentality.
And frankly, I would say you put up all the Cy Young's records and say these are all going to be
511 wins.
It never happened.
Like when we get 300 game winners, they're like 42 years old now.
Well, that and they're guaranteed to make the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, just to get to 300 is like, and there he is. Ah, the old man out for one more run here at Yankee Stadium.
Yep, just put him in Cooperstown now.
And then he gets the 300th win. You're like, yeah, congratulations. But he's not getting 211 more than that.
That's why I was saying I think the home run record, Barry Bonds' home run record, I don't think that's unbreakable. I think it's hard to get to.
I do too, but I wouldn't be surprised later down the road with better training and more analytics and more – more real understanding.
Right.
As the technology develops to be a better hitter, there might be one Aaron Judge-like player that's like, okay, I got this now, and I hit 75.
Well, I also see, I think you might have a couple eventually, too. There's be a couple of them, especially with players starting earlier nowadays, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you're pulling up, what's his name from San Diego? Fernando Tatis Jr. started, these guys are starting much younger. I don't know.
Yeah. All right, well, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. I agree with you on that. Cy Young should be number one. The win total should be number one. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Coming up, we'll continue to look at what we've got coming in the NFL. Still no word on Tampa Bay Kansas City as to where that is going. We do know that Florida and Eastern Washington are going to be played on Sunday. But no other. Oh, South Carolina moved its game to Thursday. They think the hurricane is going to be sweeping up and catching them later in the week. And it's on track to be, you know, big torrential storm. But, you know, obviously lacking the hurricane once it makes landfall. But
just get it in before it's too late.
Yeah, still just get it in just in case. What I'm surprised of is, when is Eastern Washington getting into Central Florida?
Are they? I think they're flying.
Like, are they
into,
there now? Like,
or are they flying into Tennessee and then taking a bus?
Yeah,
over?
Like, how would they get? Like, I wouldn't fly to Florida if I could. You know what I mean? Like, what would? Like, they're shutting down the major airports. So when would they schedule to arrive? I've been with college teams. They usually arrive like a day before.
Well, I guess the storm's what, supposed to blow through Thursday and then
So I guess maybe by Friday it'll be fine. Yeah. By the way, who flies in the plane that goes into the hurricane to measure the stuff?
The hurricane hunters?
Is that a drone? Is that a drone thing, or is that a real? That's gotta be a real pilot, right?
That's a military issued C-130 that they outfit with.
God love you, man. Awesome. So
It's outfitted with all the latest weather measuring gear that you could possibly think of. I mean, the whole belly of the plane is just like one gigantic supercomputer.
So it goes into the thing, measures all of it.
The pilots fly in the middle of the hurricane, enter and exit through, you know, going into the eye wall. So, I mean, there will be a period where, you know, they're flying and it's all shaking and craziness, and then they bust through the eye wall, and then you're in this perfect circle of perfect weather.
The cone of silence.
Yeah. So I also wondered that, too. It's like, because I've never been in a hurricane where the eye is right above me. I'm like,
yeah.
All right, so does cold air come sweeping down like I saw in Day After Tomorrow?
Yeah, Day After Tomorrow. Was that not the most craziest, most ridiculous movie ever created?
But I'm wondering, okay, you know, because every one of these type disaster movies has a little bit of truth to it.
A little bit of truth, but
so
yeah.
So I'm wondering, you know, does cold air come funneling down like in a hurricane?
Day After Tomorrow was so fun. Like, it got so cold, pilots froze to death instantly. Like,
as soon as they opened the door, they just kept the door closed.
Yep, exactly. And then there was, we'll walk from Philadelphia to New York should take us, I don't know, a day, like in a snowstorm. I'm coming for you, son. We're walking. And it just shows them walking to New York City. Like, don't worry, we'll be there in 10 minutes. like, in that storm, where they were walking through, Dennis Quaid and everybody was walking through, if you would average probably 5 miles a day in a storm like that. You couldn't go that far. Your body would be so exhausted, consuming so many calories, you couldn't make it. And yet they were just like, no, he'll get there. Don't worry about it. He'll go a couple hundred miles. It's fine. Don't worry. He'll arrive. Save his son. That's fine.
All right, I'm looking it up right now.
What, the big plane?
Philadelphia to New York, if you were to drive, it's 2 hours, 16 minutes, right?
Right.
But if you were to walk it, it says 1 day, 1 hour. So it'll take you 25 hours to walk there.
Well, maybe so, depending on how many miles you could get in a day.
Yeah.
If you could get
and I'm assuming
25 miles a day. Wait a minute. That's like 100. No way in one 90, day.
94 miles.
You can't walk 94 miles in a day.
I'm saying what this has registered down, 1 day, 1 hour, which you have to think about is 25 hours. It'll take you 25 hours to walk there. Now, I don't know if you can walk.
Oh, that's 4 miles an hour.
Yeah, and I don't know if you can walk 25 hours straight.
No.
That's what you have to think about.
But yeah, if you could walk four miles an hour for 25 straight hours, yeah, you'd get there.
Yeah.
But if you weren't, you know, stopping to eat
or
stopping
sleep.
To rest or sleep or
just walking through the middle
warm
of the night.
Up from the snowstorm.
And this is, you know, obviously this is right now, which would be perfect weather conditions.
Yeah, this would be not
5 feet of snow and blizzard where you're having to wear special shoes. And
man, look at us breaking down and disaster
and
movies.
And rescue people from falling through mall roofs.
As a hurricane is coming through. Ay, ay, ay. All right, coming up. We'll talk some college football next. Who are the teams in the top 25 that we should now be starting to pay attention to as we get closer and closer to October? Next, as we continue, it's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. So the AP Top 25 and the coaches poll, I was talking about this at the top of the hour. It does matter to schools if they get in here, and there is a sense of pride, even though you know that they're not the valuable thing. What's valuable is the way the committee ranks you. Now, people have said, well, they kind of take their cues from this. I don't know, man. I think that if you're on that committee, you don't need the AP to tell you that Tennessee's good, right? You don't need the committee to say USC is good. You know that Georgia and Alabama are. You know Ohio State is. You know Michigan and Clemson are. But I don't think you need the AP Top 25 or the coaches to say, hey, don't forget about NC State, right? Like, I just, when people say take their cues, I'm like, well, what cue are they taking? Do you mean the committee is just sitting around going, does anybody know anything about Ole Miss? I'm like, actually, you know what? They're pretty good. The AP, they like them. Oh, good. Then we like them too. No, they're watching games too. They're analyzing what Lane Kiffin's got and all of those kind of things. So I don't really buy that as much. But nevertheless, going back to Kansas at 4-0, would it have killed anybody in the AP or the coaches poll to put them in the top 25? No, it wouldn't have. And it would have said something like, hey, we see you. We kind of see what you're doing. Jalen Daniels, their quarterback that I was talking about at the top of the hour, he's having such a good year that people were like, if you could put him in a Heisman talk, you that's what you would do, right? They have a really good offense. They're scoring enough. Their defense isn't as strong, right? The defense isn't playing as well, right? They're giving up too many yards per drive, etc. So I can understand the sort of pushback a little bit, keeping them out. But I also think that in the end, what you are in terms of a voter in the AP or the coaches poll is to say, wait, look, we recognize what we're seeing. And what we're seeing is Kansas right now is playing very good football. Are they playing better than 4-0 Florida State? Well, that's for them to decide. Are they playing better than Minnesota, who is also 4-0 on the season? That's for them to sort of decide. Now, again, more games will come and it'll sort itself out. And in the end, to the casual fan, these rankings don't have a lot of value. But they would have value to Kansas. Because as I was talking about earlier, we sometimes get trapped in our own perceptions. And college football is going to shake that a lot now with the transfer portal. Because a team can go from middle of the road, not very good, to really good quickly if you convince certain players to come to your program. And I think that is one of the aspects of college football that's going to make it a little bit more tougher to analyze. Now, if you look at other sports, for example, if you are talking about free agency in baseball, for example, right? And let's say you've got a number of players that are free agents and let's say Pete Alonso is a free agent and he leaves the Mets and he signs a deal with the Padres. I don't know why I just mentioned the Padres because they seem to land all the free agents. Nevertheless, let's say he lands in Colorado, right? You could say, well, he brings this bat, he does this, he does that, and he could add to, right? That's the kind of the way you would approach it. NFL, if indeed there was a Lamar Jackson free agents frenzy, you would say, once he arrives, he does this, this, and this. College sports is a little different because transferring from one program to another are mostly players, not all players, but mostly players that are struggling to find a spot within their current team that they're on. Maybe it's a crowded field at running back, or it's a crowded field at quarterback, or it's a crowded field at linebacker. So they choose to transfer and they go somewhere else, and you're not really sure what the impact is going to be. Now, Caleb Williams, for example, is an exception to that rule. Caleb Williams followed his coach, right? Caleb Williams started at Oklahoma when Spencer Rattler was starting to fall apart a little bit for them. He did really well. His coach left. He left. That's an exception to the rule. Most of the times, it's a quarterback that's had a little bit of time. Somebody else has taken the job. Now he wants to go play. He doesn't want to sit behind somebody, especially somebody that is younger than he is, has more eligibility than he is, and may take that job. And so they realize their time is short and they go somewhere else. So it's really hard to evaluate. And I think, though, that is sort of the way where Kansas gets a little trapped is, does a team like Kansas have to sell us more because of who they were in the past? And the answer is yes. This is the biggest criticism of the way the college football landscape is that in the end, it really isn't so much about a clean slate for everybody and let's judge it the way it is. It is almost as if we have certain expectations for some teams, certain expectations for others, and we're more concerned about the ones we have expectations for meeting those expectations than we are about anybody coming up and surprising us. And that's one of the reasons that the polls and while they are irrelevant to the big picture of the playoff, still carry a little bit of weight. If Kansas can't get into the AP top 25, let's say, and if they win some more, they will. Let's be honest. If they win some more, they will. But if you're 4-0 and you can't get into the AP top 25 over teams that are 3-1, and no one's saying that they're better than Texas A&M. Texas A&M has hardly any offense, but they found a bit of rhythm now since losing to Appalachian State. But if you're Kansas and you can't be above a Pitt or a Kansas State at 4-0, what does that say about the way you're being perceived? And again, don't get me wrong, Kansas has got flaws, like a lot of teams have certain flaws. But a lot of it too is protecting the way you originally had these teams in the first place. And you look at a team like Tennessee. Tennessee came into the season with a lot of high hopes. Their quarterback, Hendon Hooker, doesn't turn the ball over and is actually really proficient with his arm and his legs. He can run, he can get the first down, he can do all the things that you'd want a Josh Heupel quarterback to do. Up tempo, fast, pick up yardage, score quickly, those kind of things. He's built for that system. Okay, so Tennessee at the beginning of the year, they're on the outside, they get ranked, they come in, now they're ranked eighth. But why? How could they go from that to eighth? Because the perception was, well, when we see it and we think what we think they can do, we'll reward them. Okay, that's exactly what happened here, right? But Minnesota is sort of the same way. Well, Minnesota could be pretty good. They're not ranked. Now they're 4-0. Yeah, okay. But we kind of liked some things about them. Florida State is ranked. They weren't at the beginning of the season. Now they're ranked 23rd. Same concept. Well, there are some pieces there we like. Let's see. Did anybody say that about Kansas? Did anybody say that at the beginning of the season about the Jayhawks? No. So why did half the media want game day, for example, to go to Lawrence? It was because Kansas was great? Was because their matchup against Duke 3-0 and 3-0 was the must-see game of the weekend? No. It had nothing to do with that. The reason they wanted game day to go to Lawrence is because Kansas and Duke, if you wanted to go down that road since they were 3-0-2, they were feel-good stories because it was unexpected that they would be in this position when they met in week four. Right? It was an unexpected surprise. That's why they wanted them to go. Tennessee and Florida, I could have pegged that at the beginning of the season. I could have looked at the schedule at the beginning of the season for that weekend and said, hey, what game do you think game day should go to? And it would have been the game or one of the games that I would have selected. Why? Tennessee had high expectations going into the season, that they were under the second year of Josh Heupel. They had an offense that started to really show that they could play in the first year of Josh Heupel. And Florida was loaded with talent, and we're getting a new head coach that people liked, including myself. Plus, it's an SEC rival game, even though Florida had dominated the rivalry. So I would have said that's where they're going to go. If I'm looking at this early season, nobody's played it down yet, that's where it would be. Kansas and Duke, because it was a pleasant surprise and they're feel-good stories and, oh my God, we didn't expect this. Yay, look at the Jayhawks. They're selling out their stadium. They never do. It's amazing. That's where they wanted the attention to be, because that's sort of now this shiny new toy. But you know what's the problem with college football? It doesn't like shiny new toys. Tim Brando talks about this all the time. I have a lot of friends who cover college football for a living. It's kind of their beat. I've heard them say the same thing. They don't like shiny new toys. You know how big of a deal it was for Cincinnati to get in the playoff? It's more than you think. Cincinnati should have been in the playoff, and they were in the playoff. Do you know how hard it was for that sport to acknowledge a non-Power 5 school? We've been talking about it forever. And it finally happened that Cincinnati went in to the playoff as a non-Power 5 conference school. And now, where are they heading? They're going to be heading into the Big 12. Right? UCF couldn't get a cup of coffee in the conversation if their life depended on it. Couldn't get Boise State in that conversation. You know how many people would be relieved on like a late October night or early November night that somebody from Nevada kicked a field goal through the uprights to knock off Boise State? And this was pre-college football playoff days. Oh, you should have heard the joy from Tuscaloosa all the way to Los Angeles. Get rid of them. Ugh. If I have to hear one more Boise State could beat our... It was ridiculous. It doesn't like shiny new things. It loves its Georgia. It loves its Alabama. It loves its Michigan and Ohio State. It loves its Clemson too. It loves USC with Lincoln Riley now. I worry about Kentucky. I'll be honest with you. I worry about Tennessee. I worry about NC State, who's playing Clemson this weekend. Do you know why? Because it's not about going undefeated anymore. Very rarely are teams going to go undefeated. There's just so much talent out there. And if you do, God bless you. If you do go undefeated. It's about what does the one loss mean? When you get that one loss, what does it mean? And you know what it means for a lot of schools? Now, it does depend on who you lose to. Don't get me wrong. It does depend on how you lose. But for a lot of these schools, it means the party's over. Georgia can lose. Alabama can lose. Alabama has lost and not been hurt by it. Michigan, Ohio State may be unbeaten when they play each other, but if I'm a betting guy, I doubt it. I think one of them is going to lose at some point this season before they meet. But if they meet and they do play against each other and Ohio State wins and Michigan doesn't play in the championship game of the Big Ten, how much does that hurt them? Probably a lot. So Kansas, get into the party. Have a good time. Keep winning your football games. But you know what's going to happen? The moment you do cough it up and Jalen Daniels has a bad game and the Heisman buzz that is kind of around him now because it's September and we like to do this with the Heisman, it's going to disappear quick. And everybody that showed up to your party is going to grab some memorabilia and get the hell out of the room. Because again, this sport, it never likes new things. In college basketball, we embrace new things. Do we all know where St. Peter's is? Raise your hand if you remember it's in Jersey City. I bet you do. We love it. We love it. Embrace them. Florida Gulf Coast. I could name a million of them over my lifetime. College football? It took Cincinnati to finally go, hey, knock, knock, we're here. And even then, they really had to show America that they belonged in the party. It's a tough sport to crack. Does the 8-team playoffs, 12-team playoff, whatever they're going to come up with down the road, is that going to help? It'll probably help. But don't be surprised if it's still filled with the same old teams, with the same old programs, with the same old coaches, and the same old history. Because when you're Kansas and you've done decades and decades of losing, and you're finally winning, you still can't get a seat at the table. All right, we'll come back. We'll wrap up this hour. Get you up, set up for hour number two, three. And don't forget in hour three, we're going to talk about Kentucky and Tennessee and Alabama and Georgia and the SEC as they are again have got a number of teams in the top 25 and the overall conference. We'll get that feeling for you as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. By the way, the thing about college football, it's kind of why I'm not exactly opposed to the destruction of the bowl system. Listen, if you want to expand the playoff, that's fine. I always thought it was going to happen anyway, despite the powers that be always going, no, it's impossible. We're trapped in these contracts. Whatever. Yeah, as soon as you get more money involved and lawyers involved, you'll figure out how to get out of those kinds. Stop it. They always tried to play that game. Always used to drive me crazy. Are you thinking about expanding? Oh, no. We're locked in. We're locked into the system. I heard that forever. If there was one thing I hated, when I would, and this was, and I'm not pointing anybody out that we get on to talk college football, but almost every single person that we would get on, and I would say to them, what's this rumor that I'm hearing about expanding the playoff, right? Because it would always be like some little nugget in the news about expanding the playoff. Everybody would say, well, they can't until 2058 because they're locked into the, like, they're locked in with ESPN. And I'm like, is that what's holding all of this back? Is a television deal that can be renegotiated? Because apparently that's locked in. That's like a deal with the devil. Like, you're not getting out of it. That's too bad. Your soul belongs to him. That's it. Apparently they can't renegotiate for more money. Right? The television companies are like, no. We like what we're getting here. Like, how about this? We double the playoff and we give you way more money than we're giving you now. No. We're just not interested. And these would drive me crazy. And I'd be like, these things can be renegotiated. Like, no. They're locked in. There's nothing we can do. And what is the buzz now? Yeah, we're going to go to this 12-team super thing that we've got going on. So, but I look, South Carolina, a team that's very unlikely to ever get into a 12-team playoff. To me, I like when they go to a bowl game, even if it's a basic bowl, just sort of the way to end the season. It gives me something on the holidays, at least, to look forward to. All right, wake up call continues on Sports Map Radio.